Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, welcome back, or indeed welcome, to the MBL Pocket Podcast. This is the podcast that attempts to give you the cool gives rather than the hot takes on NBL basketball. It's a statistical and anecdotal look at basketball in Australia, and I hope you enjoy it. That's if you're new. My guest this week is John Stensholt, who is a business journalist with The Australian. On March 13th, he wrote an article entitled NBL, Riding Wave of Popularity, but Financial Gains Are Slow to Follow. I encourage everybody to read it and indeed subscribe to John at The Australian. He puts out some really interesting sports business content. I read this article and felt a degree of alarm for the NBL, I suppose, and its owners after reading. But after reading it a little closer and talking to John, I was filled with a little more optimism about the financial viability and sustainability of the NBL. Can the NBL survive under the current seemingly owner passion project model, especially during and after coronavirus? That was the ultimate question I hoped to get an answer to after speaking with John, and I hope that answer comes forward. A reminder, if you liked what you heard, you might wish to subscribe to the podcast, give it an honest star rating out of 5, and if you're feeling really plucky, write a review of the show. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy John Stensholt. My first question for you, John, is what inspired you to write this article in the first place?
Oh, look, I write about the business of sport. I mean, look, you know, I flick between writing for our business section of the newspaper and our sports section. I'm mostly business, to be honest. I do the big richest 250 list that The Australian puts out every year. And there's plenty of people with sports connections on that, including Larry Kestelman. So, you know, Larry being the owner of the NBL, I've always had a particular interest in the business side of sport. It's just a niche thing that I've carved out. So I've written a little bit about NBL over the time. In business terms, I think it's an interesting one, given that, A, it's got an owner who owns the league. That's very unique in sport around the world. And obviously there's the private ownership of the clubs as well. So not every league's like that. The A-League has private ownership. You know, the AFL doesn't. The NRL's got a mixture. So that's why I think the NBL's a bit unique. And look, I've always had an interest in basketball as well. I grew up in Canberra and used to go watch the Canberra Cannons all the time back in the day, back in the glory days of the 80s.
So, sure, the Phil Smythe era.
Exactly right.
Yeah. You put out this article on March 13th, after Game 2 of the Grand Finals. Was that timing by design or just so happened?
Oh, look, a bit of both. Nothing, you know, nothing untoward about it. It's more like when I could find the time to write something. I'd put the rich list, you know, had gone off to the printers, and it was the following week, and I was looking around for things to, something different to write about, and I thought, look, we'll look at the NBL. I'd had this idea for quite a while about looking at the business side of it, you know, besides what Larry's talked about with me previously and so on. The Saturday paper's our biggest red paper of the week. I just thought it'd be a good Saturday story more than anything, and then I thought, well, it's not bad timing as well, either, given it, you know, gets between game 2 and 3, which was slated for that Friday night. Right. And the Sunday, so, you know, basketball is sort of you know, topical too.
This is one that's off-grid here, but did you get any feedback or response from your article?
Oh, yeah, you always get, you know, feedback, absolutely. Yeah, no, nothing. Look, a few people said it was good to sort of get that information out there. No sort of issues or anything like that. You always get a bit of chatter on Twitter and stuff about it, so... Yeah, it was interesting.
Okay. In the article, it writes, 9 teams set to lose 15 to 20 mil combined this year. From that, am I and those reading it to take that 15 to 20 loss is evenly distributed? So each of the 9 teams is losing, you know, just over a mil each? Or is it possible that some teams are in the positive?
Oh, it's a bit up and down, yeah. So, yeah. Look, I mean, Paul Smith at Sydney Kings will admit that, you know, that they're investing pretty heavily, you know, up front. I mean, you know, they spent about $1 million alone this year on a billboard advertising campaign. You know, so that, you know, they're investing. Grant Kelly at Adelaide will also admit that, you know, they're making losses as well. You know, Perth would go pretty close to breaking even. I would suggest that the other clubs would, you know, would lose or get pretty close to that, you know, million-ish mark losses. So, no, it's a bit, I mean, you know, Sydney would probably skew the numbers a bit, but that's not unexpected. They've done a lot of investing. You know, Paul's got pretty deep pockets. So I would probably say that, you know, Sydney would probably have the biggest loss in the league, you know, and then it sort of cascades down from there. Just an important point to make, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, the clubs will lose as much as their owners want them to, I suppose, unless there's, you know, clear business difficulties. I mean, the league and private ownership of sports clubs around the world is set up that, you know, it's almost like a club owner is covering the losses that come up. So obviously I'll try and get in as much revenue as possible, but there's also this pull to, to spend for the, you know, the greater glory of the club, to try to win a championship and so on. So some of it is about, you know, what the club owners can tolerate in terms of financial losses too.
Right. So as you said, Sydney spent big. South East Melbourne was the other one. They were a start-up, and you expect most startups, whether it's a coffee shop or whatever, to, you know, struggle their first year financially. My question is, why did the clubs have the other clubs, the long stay clubs, and why is a team like Perth so successful, only just breaking even? What's their business model that's perhaps not quite working?
Oh, look, it's not necessarily the case that the business model's not working. As I said, I think it's a case of the clubs' owners, you know, tolerating as much, you know, loss as possible. Look, the important point, I think, with the NBL is that there's not a lot of TV revenue coming in.
Right.
So, you know, the revenue that comes in is obviously from the gates, you know, membership, sponsorship. So where other sports will have lucrative TV deals. Now, that business model would be a hell of a lot more healthy if there was, you know, a couple of $1 million or whatever going to each club, you know, from the TV deal every year. So that's the difference. The TV deal doesn't mean there's a hell of a lot of money going to the clubs. So there's only certain sources of revenue that they can pull on. It's different in other sports.
And the sources of revenue, I would imagine attendance as being foremost.
Yeah, that's a very important part of the NBL. I mean, you're talking, what, 90-odd percent you know, capacity for a lot of the clubs, right? I mean, they've done extremely well to get people through the gate. You know, it's a good entertainment experience, so people like to go along. It's just a matter of trying. And this has been the NBL's perennial problem for decades, right?
Yeah.
Probably inverted commas in a way. So how to convert that interest in people going along as spectators into decent TV numbers.
Yeah, let's jump to that. So the TV deal at present is an advertising profit share deal rather than for lucrative rights. Do you mind explaining for me the difference between the two, profit share and lucrative rights?
Well, really, if you're doing an advertising share, it's whatever advertiser you can get on the television, you know, in the breaks, you know, sponsorship on TV.
Right.
So the TV channel, in this case ESPN and SBS Viceland, will share that revenue that they get from the advertisers with the NBL. Now, that's not going to be a lot in you know, dollar terms compared to getting a, say, a broadcast rights deal where, let's take the example of the A-League, Fox Sports pay roughly $60 million a year for the right to broadcast that sport.
Right.
So they, now from that, Fox will keep all the advertising revenue they get, and they obviously get subscribers too, but $60 million goes from their broadcaster to the league, and the league distributes a lot of that money down to the clubs. That's not happening in the NBL.
Right. In the age of coronavirus and after coronavirus, has it shown the importance of TV, and has TV made itself, pardon the pun, sickeningly obvious that, you know, that's the way forward? Attendances are fickle. You know, we've seen where, you know, attendances are now just completely fallen away with this, but also there's so much entertainment content, it's difficult to drag a family of four away from Netflix, away from the theatre, into a crowded sports arena through public transport or just traffic in general. Is TV like the only way forward or for the NBL?
Oh, it's a very, very important way forward. But, you know, there is that high level of positivity around the league. And, and the crowd numbers have been, and as I said, have been excellent. So in that regard, you know, they are doing a very good job of dragging families out and getting them to go along, particularly over the summer period. I mean, you know, Sydney had massive crowds. Melbourne has done so well in that regard. You know, Adelaide, crowds were up, you know, really big. I mean, Perth getting 13,000 fans a game.
Mm.
You know, it's a spectacular number. I mean, that's better than the soccer team does at the same time over there. You know, you've seen the BBL numbers come off as well. I mean, that's an outstanding sports franchise anywhere in Australia, I think. So they do actually a very good job. I mean, yes, for the money to go up, there has to be TV, but no one knows what the landscape's going to look like. I mean, after all this is over, I mean, you know, already, I mean, all the broadcasters now have turned the tap off because there's no sport happening. So no one's getting any money at the moment. And everyone's cutting their costs.
Do you think, does basketball have national interest in Australia? Could a game between, let's say there was a team in Canberra, could a game between Canberra and Cairns have interest in Perth, Sydney, or Melbourne? Like, does it have a possibility as a TV thing, or is TV sport closed to everything other than AFL, rugby, and cricket?
Yeah, that's a really hard one because I'd argue that the NBL, unlike other sports codes, have too many regional teams to get that interest up. I mean, you're right. Again, you know, Illawarra against Cairns is not going to be a big draw card on TV for anyone in Melbourne or Sydney, let alone you know the smaller markets. NRL and AFL, because of their historical nuance, I suppose, to those codes, they have most of their teams in Melbourne and Sydney, which are the two biggest television markets in the country. There's Brisbane too, to a certain extent. It's obviously Queensland's huge for rugby league, but because of that historical anomaly of having so many teams packed into those two big markets, those are obviously the two biggest TV sports as well. You start a new league, you know, you're never going to put 8 or 10 teams in Sydney, are you, for NBL, or 10 teams in Melbourne? So that's the problem. You've only got one team or two teams in each market. So there's only going to be a certain amount of games, I think, that'll appeal to those markets.
Well, going back to the 15 to 20 mil loss, what would you say are the biggest overheads for the NBL? Like, obviously, wages is for most businesses one, but is there anything that's a bit out of the box specific to the NBL?
Oh no! Look, I think player wages be the most of it. I don't know otherwise. I mean, there's always
travel,
stadium.
maybe.
It's what it's travel. Yeah, I mean, but you're going to get that
Yeah.
sort of offset by sponsorships. I mean, every code has some sort of a deal with you know an airline. I think it all depends as well what sort of stadium deal you have. So if you get you know a certain rental agreement with the stadium owners, which are mostly government authorities, you're going to do a bit better. I mean, that's a perennial bugbear for any sports code, let alone the NBL. I mean, you know, whatever stadium deal you can eke out, it gets you a certain amount of revenue, you know, per crowd person, or, you know, a certain amount of, or any amount of corporate hospitality is a good one. But it's not easy for any club, let alone NBL clubs.
In the article, you talked about the Tasmanian deal, and you say it'll be the first time the team will be in its own venue, and you call it perhaps the best sports deal in the league. Is that the way you see things going forward? Like, is that the best possible way? And is it possible to roll that out league wide? Would smaller venues that clubs own be an increase on you know those huge attendances in the bigger buildings that they're paying rent on?
I think, yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating one. I mean, you need someone with deep pockets to do that. And look, I know the club owners have discussed that, maybe moving to smaller venues, but having more control over that venue in terms of, you know, owning it or, you know, owning all the, you know, much more ticket revenue or, you know, the money that people pay for beer or whatever. Yeah, that sports business deal, I think, for Larry Kestelman down in Hobart is a fascinating one. I mean, just to explain that a little bit more, he's got the 50-year management rights to that stadium, the Derwent Entertainment Centre, which will be refurbished using government money. So he gets, you know, so over a couple of years, he gets control of that. So, you know, if there's a concert that gets held there or if there's other sports that get held there, you know, Larry is the guy that puts on that, you know, or hosts that event. Then he also gets control of a 150-odd million dollar commercial property precinct that will get built around that stadium. So, you know, he'll build, you know, retail outlets, he'll build car parks, he'll build potentially a hotel or accommodation, and restaurants and bars for people to go along to as well. So it's a property deal. And if you go to America in particular, and if you go to where, you know, I mean, there are billionaires obviously over there that own the NBA clubs, the NHL as well, or NFL, they're all property deals. So you have a stadium where people get drawn to, but around that stadium there's other ways of making money. So you have your restaurants, your bars, you know, apartments or whatever. There's a lot that goes on around those stadiums. And Larry is doing that, you know, albeit on a smaller scale, down in Hobart. And I think that's really where it's fascinating. That's where sport as a business becomes a money-making proposition.
Right. Because, I mean, in your thing, you even say Grant Kelly says that the NBL or basketball is two-fifths entertainment, three-fifths sport. And if you're talking about the kind of deal you're talking about, that very much is in line with that thinking. Do you agree with that assessment of basketball and the league, you know, basketball within Australia as a product, that two-fifths entertainment, three-fifths sport? Do you agree with that sort of description?
Oh, look, I mean, there's always going to be a purist sort of ideology that you go, well, no, I'm just there to watch the sport. And of course, there's people like that. But, you know, if you're getting young families along, well, the kids want to be entertained as well. I mean, those days are probably gone where you just go up and, you know, you go and watch the sport and put up with a, you know, sitting on the hill or sitting in a terrible stadium and, you know, getting maybe a Coke or, you know, or, you know, a terrible hot dog. I mean, people want to be entertained and they want to do it in comfort. It's just the reality of it. I mean, to go along with that, though, I mean, you've got to put a decent product, and sorry to use that word, on the court. And, yeah, the NBL, you know, in sports terms, is a terrific product, right? I mean, it's a really, really good league, I think, in that regard. It's come a long way in the last few years. So if you get both right, then you're doing, you know, you're doing an extremely good job, I think.
I had Jeff Van Groningen on this podcast a while ago, and he said that essentially the NBL just hasn't had at its disposal the sort of pillars of media that the likes of AFL, NRL and so forth have had. And this is off-grid again, but do you feel like there's a resistance to basketball or a fear? I don't know if you ever looked into when the NBL sort of made its switch from winter to summer. And there was a bit of a sort of a deal in place with Channel 7, and then that got removed. Is there a little bit of a maintaining the status quo and keeping basketball at a bit of an arm's reach from TV and mainstream media in Australia, or is that unfair?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, look, I actually remember I remember going from winter to summer when I was going along to Canberra Cannons games, and all of a sudden, you know, in the summer you were going, you know, indoors. It was a bit strange, but then again, it was very cold in Canberra winters going to the Palace back in the day. But no, look, you go back and read the same stories, that it's the same thing over time. You know, in those glory days, in inverted commas, the crowds were really good, but the TV just couldn't cut through. And look, I think basketball had a lot of goodwill around it on TV. I mean, I remember the Channel 10, Saturday night games. Channel 7 did the same.
Live.
They just didn't rate enough. Exactly, live. I mean, live broadcast of NBL games on free-to-air. They just didn't rate enough, unfortunately. And, you know, that's... Look, basketball's a little bit like soccer in that way. There's just such a huge participation base, and people are passionate about the game at a player level. But how to convert that into people taking an interest in the elite level is a hard thing to do, particularly when those teams haven't been around for 100 years like they have in the AFL and NRL. So, and you know the history of the NBL with teams getting chopped and coming back, and now there is a degree of stability there now, which is good. But I think it just takes time to build up, and I hope it does. It's going to take time.
In your article, Paul Smith, the Kings owner, says we don't have an ownership stake in the league itself, which is different to other leagues. My question to you, John, is why is that different? Is that unusual? Is that a hindrance to profit?
Well, yes, I think it is. I mean, Larry owns the league, right? But Larry doesn't now. He doesn't. Well, he will own the Hobart team, but he doesn't necessarily own. He's got a small stake in Melbourne United now. So what happens is Larry controls the league, but the owners bear the financial risk of their each individual club. So if there's a, you know, $2 million shortfall of Sydney, then Paul's covering that, or $1 million of Adelaide, then Grant's covering that. But what they don't have when a buyer comes along and buys a team is they don't have a stake or necessarily a say in the entire league. So your asset is just your club. You don't have an asset in the league as well. So if the league gets sold for $100 million, that money goes to Larry. It doesn't go to the owners necessarily. So all they've got is their own club. So that, and that, you know, business people like to be in control, right? So they like to be the masters of their own destiny. In this case, they're not. They have to deal with Larry. Now, Larry's done a fantastic job. I feel that there's going to come a time where, you know, these owners have also got deep pockets too, will say, hey, we want to stay in what's going on too. And you can almost sort of see a little bit of that tension coming through already, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Is that unusual that teams and owners, there's a separation like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like the Premier League, English soccer, they all, each club owns the league because it's separated from the governing body. Now the NBA owners, they own the NBA, you know, 1/30th, whatever it is. Yeah, so that's pretty standard practice, to be honest.
What do you think, John? The idea of NBA stars as owners or part owners, is that perpetuating the current business model? And maybe I'm being unfair to call it the current business model of the NBL, that the owning of a club in this league is a vanity project and you know, instead of being a moneymaker. Is that an accurate description of the league and the league's financial blueprint, or is that a bit unfair?
Oh, look, I mean, maybe the better word is, a passion project than vanity. Vanity maybe has more of a negative connotation to it. I mean, yes, it is to a certain extent. I mean, every owner wants to buy in. Why do you buy into a sport club? I mean, you're not buying in it, for the money, to make money necessarily. You're buying in it because it's a, a passion project, or it stands you in good stead in the community, or you really love the sport and you want to give back. You know, it's maybe a bit of a sort of altruistic kind of idea. But I think it's particularly with the Australian dollar at the moment, it's probably very cheap. If you want to own a sports franchise and you're American and you want to own it, one that may have a decent connection to the NBA one day, then a team in Australia is pretty cheap. And those guys are obviously huge basketball junkies, right? So they want to get into basketball, and Australia's a pretty decent place for them to do that.
Yeah, no, it certainly seems that way. And an NBA team is blue chip beachfront real estate, and they very seldom come up for sale. Whereas NBL teams, exactly, you kind of get your start and get a little thing, and the salary cap of any one team in the NBL is about a tenth of what a major NBA star is making. So the business certainly works out. You talked about the grand final and how the teams carry the financial risk for finals games.
Yep.
Is that an uncommon agreement? Is that a major contributor to the 15 to 20 mil losses? And also, is that unusual, is my question here, John?
Oh, no, yes, it is. So what will happen with, the AFL, the AFL will control all the ticketing and the revenue for the AFL finals. The NRL will control all the ticketing and revenue and, sponsorship or whatever for the NRL finals, the grand final. That's where they make a lot of money from, right? So whereas with the clubs, it was mostly like, if you're just like putting on another game. So the Wildcats would have, put on the game, paid the rent for the venue. Mm-hmm. They would have, kept as much ticket revenue and sponsorship as they could out of that as well. So that's, it's actually, if you make the grand final, then obviously you've got to pay out a bit more money to your players, but it's also a money-making opportunity. So it's a good thing to make it, probably. Mm-hmm. But, unfortunately, in this case, they had the plan behind closed doors, so they probably lost money on it. But, that was a crazy situation, wasn't it?
Well, one in a million. This is off-grid again, but where do you see the NBL going after this coronavirus? They're predicting that this could last anywhere from 3 to 6 months. Anyway, I've seen projections as low and high. Is it now a chance to perhaps change back to winter, where you sort of see a delayed start of the season? And if they wanted to do that, switch back to winter? Or where do you see the league in a really odd landscape, if at all?
Oh, it's so hard to tell. Mm. So too early to tell. But whatever happens is really, you have to remember this, is at the whim of the owners and and Larry himself. It's a privately owned league, so it's whatever they decide to do, really, and however deep their pockets are to keep paying for this thing. That's the nature of the sport. That's the nature of sports business. Mm.
The last question I have for you is sports journalism. Where do you think the future is with that? Let's say your article in particular. So I went to the Australian website, looked into it. It had a pop-up for subscriptions. What do you feel the future is? A lot of people have been let off with this coronavirus. Do they come back? Is the future more audio? Is it more video? Is it written? Where do you see the landscape, John?
I think the future has to be quality, no matter what. You've got to you've got to give people good enough content for them to pay for it. So we need subscriptions. It's all about getting subs. You can't give away things for free, I don't think. If you're going to write quality things, you've got to make it good enough that people will pay for it. And at the moment, news is so prevalent around us. Everyone wants to read the news. So we're getting a lot of new subscribers, whether they're reading about the coronavirus or whether they're reading about the stock market because of that. So it's been a huge thing for us. But on the other hand, advertisers are going to fall off very quickly. So we're not immune to those problems. People are reading news more so than ever.
Mm.
But you just have to make it compelling enough for them to pay for it. Otherwise, I think you're in big trouble.
Yeah, that's very true when you say it. It's very similar to the problem facing the NBL. Huge participation for the sport, huge interest in the sport, but it's funneling that interest into an NBL product. A lot of people reading the news, very difficult to funnel that towards monetizing content and stuff. So it's an interesting time. Is there anything you want to mention that you've got coming up that people might want to be aware of?
I think we're just all trying to find stories at the moment about what the current situations are. And in my case, certainly looking at what's happening on the stock market, but also how it applies to sport as well. There's been a lot of, it's a lot of, tough times, I think, for sport in terms of what's going to happen with broadcast rights and, whether there's even going to be some clubs still in existence. So it's a really, really tough time that people are wanting to know what's going on out there.
Great. John, I appreciate that very much.
That's it. I hope you enjoyed it, everyone. If you're interested for more, always subscribe to the program, rate, review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you may be listening. And if you wish to connect, I'm on Twitter at NBLPocketPod, P-O-D, Gmail, NBLPocketPodcast@gmail.com, and also Facebook, NBLPocketPodcast, and on Instagram, NBLPocketPodcast. So take your pick. Thanks again.